Let me throw some numbers by you. One out of every $14 in taxes goes to the Department of Corrections. How about that? The state's prison population up 500% in the last three decades. 500%. Now, how safe do you feel? In your own neighborhood, do you feel safer today than you did 30, 40 years ago? I know I don't. Why don't we? I mean, if we have prison populations that have gone up 500% to about 51,400 people, you would think all the bad guys are in prison, right? All the bad guys are not in prison. But we're spending a boatload of money. And in fact, we spend more money on corrections than we do in higher education, you know, colleges, universities, on the state side. More money in corrections. Something's got to change. And in a budget cycle like we're in right now, where money is as tight as it is, wouldn't you rather see the money spent on something else than when it comes to corrections? Especially, I mean, for the people who are the real bad guys, I want them in prison. But all 51,400 of these guys, all of them horrible people that we just need to be to have in prisons and out of society, not even close to being the case. With us right now is Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Stuart Greenleaf. He's a Republican out of Bucks and Montgomery counties. And interesting comments regarding the issue with the Department of Corrections, number of people that we have in prisons. Senator Greenleaf, with all the people that we have in prison right now, 51,400, you would think that the crime rate would be so low right now in PA, but it's not. First of all, how did we get to have these kind of numbers in the first place? How did we have the population in prison just explode over three decades?
Well, we took the approach that that we wanted to get tough on crime. And so we, and I was certainly part of this program, and we were passing legislation to get tough on crime. And so we passed mandatory sentences on many crimes. We passed all types of proposals. And some of them were good in directing towards violent offenders, because we're not talking about tonight violent offenders. We're talking about nonviolent offenders here. And to preserve the public safety. But in fact, while we were doing that, and that was since 1980, I looked at that, and our violent crime rate slowly went up. You would think with all those tough on crime legislation, and you can look at any of our websites, my website, others, over the bills we passed. I mean, we were pretty tough. And during that time, our prison population, as you said, went up 522%. But you know what our general state population increased by? 6%. So there's something wrong with those percentages. And you know what? If we had seen the violent crime plummet like we inspect it, then it might be worth spending the money. But in fact, that's not the case. That's not what happened. Violent crime since 1980 to the present time has slowly gone up.
Well, senators, some would argue that if we didn't spend all the money that we spend, if we didn't incarcerate all the people that we've put in prison, could you then suggest that the crime rate would be even worse in Pennsylvania?
Hardly. And we have some empirical evidence to prove that that's not the case, because what happens is we help to make it continue, make prisoners. Yes, let's look at this.
Okay.
People are responsible for their actions, no question about it. But, and we can be tough on crime, and I've been probably the toughest legislator on crime during my time there. But we have to be smart on crime, too. So let's look at the facts. Let's look at New York, the state of New York. New York had, some decades ago, adopted what they called the Rockefeller mandatories for drugs. And, I mean, you got life imprisonment for dealing with drugs. They were really, really tough. They had the same experience that Pennsylvania had, but worse. Their prison population skyrocketed. Their violent crime went up. And it had no impact on it. So what did they do? They made these changes and made repeals, and they did some things in regard to incentives. They're getting people back on they reintegrate into prison, because 90% or more of the inmates that are going to prison come out.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
if we don't have at least some kind of reentry programs for them and help them, they're going to come back. That's what's happening in Pennsylvania. But before I get into that, New York made those forms, made prison reform, and they start to reduce their prison population by 1,000 inmates a year, while we in Pennsylvania have been increasing our prison population by 2,000 a year. Their violent crime went down. We just had a visit from a state representative from Texas. He visited the Capitol. I talked to him
at
a press conference about what they did in Texas. Now, Texas makes Pennsylvania look soft on crime. And what they did since 2006 is they made these reforms as well, and they've been reducing their prison population, and violent crime has not gone up. Because what the problem is, punishment without rehabilitation is an absolute failure. And we have to look at what is the purpose of the criminal justice system, just to convict everybody that we possibly can and put them in jail and forget about them?
Well, that was the mindset behind being tough on crime, was it not? It was just about, these people are committing crimes, we're going to throw them in prison, and then they'll learn their lesson, and then they'll come out and never want to have to go through that again. I mean, that was pretty much the mindset, was it not?
Absolutely it was. And I was very much a part of that. But the fact is, that's not how it works. Because what happens? They go in there with a drug addiction or an alcohol addiction. They go in there without education. They go there without vocational training or a job. And you know what they do when they come out? They have the same three disadvantages, but they have another one. That is a felony conviction.
Right.
So without any help or assistance, a lot of them want to reintegrate into society. But we're not giving them any assistance at all. That's what I say, punishment without rehabilitation. So what happens? Our recidivism rate is 46% of the people released from state prisons return within 3 years. And I'm not saying all of them, but we're talking about nonviolent crimes now. But I'm not saying that all of them can be rehabilitated. But a large percentage of them can, because we don't have, this is not rocket scientists now. We have at least two other states and many other states. The states that took our prisons, we had so many prisoners coming in, 2,000 a year. That's one new penitentiary that we have to build a year at $200 million of institution, and $50 million to run it every year. So we are in a time when we're hitting a recession. We have to cut education, and we're spending more money on prisons and higher education. And certainly we could save hundreds of millions of dollars by just in the correction system alone.
Right. Senator, do me a favor if you would.
Some of these policies that will not impact public safety, will in fact will increase public safety, because every person you rehabilitate does not commit a crime.
Okay.
Now we have 46% of them that commit crimes.
Senator, do me a favor.
Revolving door, and keep and not try to save. I look at it as saving lives and saving families.
Yes, sir.
Or are we just going to just go ahead and just throw away the key? And what happens is we pay the price, not only in the corrections costs, but in the cost of that damaged families,
right?
In the communities where they commit crime. There's a lot of other consequential damages that occur here because we're not being smart on crime as well as being tough on crime. By the way,
Senator,
we had about 8,000 inmates. We now have, as you said, 51.4 inmates, and most of that increase was not driven. And goes back to your original question. Not driven by violent offenders. That was only about 2%.
Mm-hmm.
It's about over 55% of that growth was driven by nonviolent offenders.
We are talking, Senator, do me a favor. Hold on right there, if you would. I got to take a break, but there's a lot more I want to talk to you about. We're talking with Senator Stuart Greenleaf. He's a Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, and we're talking about how we have populations in prisons that have absolutely exploded over the past few decades. We are spending more money on corrections than we are in higher education, and the crime rate has not gone down. You are no safer today than you were before with all these prisoners. You're poorer, but you're no safer. What can we do to change that to where we can reduce the tax burden, have fewer prisoners in the system, and have safer communities all at the same time? More details on that coming up next. 820, we are talking with Stuart Greenleaf. He's Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman, Senator Greenleaf, a Republican. And he's proposing, are you ready for this? Having prisoners be put out of prison. He's changing his whole stance on tough on crime and realizing that, you know, just because you throw a bunch of people in prison doesn't mean you're really dealing with the crime problem and reducing crime and the threat that we as otherwise law-abiding citizens face every day. Senator Greenleaf, you were talking about some of the policies that need to be changed, and one of them obviously this need to begin a rehab process. But you also are very much in support of the idea now of not having nonviolent offenders in the prison system, coming up with some type of alternative sentencing. Expand on that, if you would, please.
Right. Well, first of all, I mean, in some cases, we have to be tough on crime. I mean, there's some people that have to go to jail and be there for a long while until they're safe, or they may never be safe to be released to prison. But that doesn't mean we apply that standard to everybody that is convicted of a crime, particularly nonviolent crime. And that's the problem. And while we're increasing our prison population, it costs them about $35,000 a year to incarcerate a person. So If we're going to be smart on crime, let's make sure that person is, it's important for them to be in prison. And let's evaluate what the prison system and criminal justice system is all about, as I said, not just to convict people for the sake of convicting them and put them in jail for the sake of, for that sake.
Well, my understanding is that Senate Bill 100 could save the state about $60 million a year and free up about 2,000 prison beds. Is that correct?
Yes, it would. And we've held hearings on this, and we've known for years there are basically three areas that are causing our increase in our prison population.
Okay.
The technical parole violators and the misuse of that program, our paroling policy and our sentencing policies. And so what does that mean? A technical parole violator is someone who is in prison, and they was released on parole, as people are provided for under the law when they reach a certain degree and point in their sentence. And when they're released, they're on supervision from the Department of Parole. They may not show up for a meeting or some other technical parole violator. A technical parole violator is someone who does not commit another crime, but in some way misses an appointment or does something in a technical way in regard to his release that is a violation of his parole.
Okay.
That person technically could be returned to serve the balance of the sentence, all of it. And most of the time, the parole department did do that. And so I saw people, and we had hearings of people that had a technical parole violation and were sending 2, 3, 4, 5 years in prison again for something that could have been addressed by the parole department and avoided that expense, and also continue that person's rehabilitation.
Okay.
And the other area is the parole. When a person is before a judge and he's sentenced, he gets a minimum and maximum sentence. He gets, let's say, two to 6 years in prison. That 2 years is the minimum, and everybody in that courtroom, and I was a district attorney, assistant district attorney in Montgomery County for 7 years and handled a lot of cases, murder cases on down, I was the chief of the appeals, handled appeal cases from the Supreme Court of the United States.
Okay.
And so I know when you're sentenced in a courtroom, you're given a minimum and a maximum. That's the requirement of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understood by the law that the judge means you to be released at your minimum unless you've done some activities in the prison or you're dangerous to society. They expect you to be released on that minimum. On the state level, they are not regularly because they have to go through some technical processes. They call them programming. And sometimes that's not completed at the time of the minimum comes up. So we end up keeping people in prison way beyond their minimums. And it was never intended to be that way. They're not a violent, they're not a danger to society. And
okay.
I said most of what we're talking about are nonviolent offenders anyway. And we're just wasting money keeping them past there.
Okay. What percent?
And then third is our sentencing policies, like mandatories and things like that.
Out of the 51,400 inmates that we have in this state, is there a percentage breakdown of those that would be deemed nonviolent offenders?
Yes, there are. The majority in prison, I think it's pretty close. There's more nonviolent, I think, than violent. But I don't have the exact figures for you.
Okay, so we could at least use the
on my part.
We
right
could
now.
At least go with half.
At least I would say half is a good figure.
Do you think that in light of that they need to be in prison, or there could be some other sentencing program for these nonviolent offenders?
Some of the nonviolent offenders will have to serve some type of a prison sentence. But, you know, when we're dealing with human beings, in order to correct their behavior, and that's the point of it, we used to call, our prison system was created by the Quakers, and they were putting people in there and to be penitent, to meditate on their offenses. That's why it was called penitentiaries.
Okay.
And so there was an intended in that process to be some type of rehabilitation, and it doesn't always involve a prison sentence, and that's up to the judge. And so
okay.
That's why last year, you know, I introduced this bill and it passed it became law.
Senator, I have to take one more
for that. Each judge before he incarcerates a person must do a risk assessment.
Senator, I'm sorry. I have to take a break here. I'm coming up on a break I just can't miss.
Okay, sure.
Are you able to stick around a little bit longer?
Absolutely.
Okay, we're talking with Senator Stuart Greenleaf. More with him coming up in a moment. 8:32. Stop laughing. It's not that funny. It's not that funny.
I like the music.
Yes.
It's nice.
I just thought a little interlude would be nice,
right.
That's all.
Just,
a little calming, a little soothing.
Just get everybody kind of ratchet it down a couple notches.
Right, exactly. Thank you, Barbara. We are talking with Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Stuart Greenleaf, and we're talking about the prison system in this state. 51,400-plus inmates. 51,400. That number up 500% over the past three decades, and crime rates are up, not down. People feel less safe, not more safe, even with those kind of numbers. We spend one out of every $14 in taxes on the prisons. One out of every 14. In fact, we spend more money on on prisons, on corrections, than we spend on higher education with colleges and universities and trade schools. There's something wrong with that number, isn't there? Well, with us tonight, Senator Greenleaf, about what we can do about that and what kind of things are in place and what needs to change. And, Senator, when we were talking about these nonviolent offenders and upwards of half of those that would be deemed nonviolent, some of them you believe need to be in prison for at least some period of time. What kind of alternative sentencing could there be? What are you imagining could be in place for some of these nonviolent offenders instead of having them in prisons?
Right. Well, first of all, we do have a program. So I was the author of them, the county intermediate program, intermediate punishment program, and the state intermediate program. And what that would do was provide incentives and saying, okay, you're sentenced to 2 to 6 years in prison for drug-related offense. But if you take drug rehabilitation programs, and if you, and by the way, a large percentage of our prison population, mm-hmm. their crimes were associated with some type of drug-related activity. So it have a tremendous impact on our prison population and the rehabilitation of them. And so it provides incentives for them. Now these programs don't apply, as I say, to violent offenders, and they have exceptions for that.
Right.
But it would require them to, it usually provides low-level drug dealing or use, and they have to go through a diagnostic assessment for dependency on drug and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
The treatment has to include residential inpatient programs, house arrest, electronic surveillance, or a partial confinement program like work release, work camp, halfway facilities. And also the district attorney could waive the requirements for the intermediate punishment program if he thought it was appropriate of person, eligible person for it. So these are programs that require them to go through treatment and successfully complete those treatment both while they're incarcerated and mm-hmm. then thereafter. And if they do, before they're released, they can get a reduction in their sentence. So that's the incentive, and that's the idea behind it. We've had that law for some time, but it's been terribly underused. And these bills will provide, hopefully, make them more attractive and easier to use. Because what we did is there was a many hindrances in the use of this program. And so it has been and is underused, and this is a hope that we'll start to use it more often in our criminal justice system.
My understanding, though, is that the House side isn't considering anything along these lines at this point.
Well, I hope they will. They did pass the bill that we introduced, the Senate bill last year,
mm-hmm.
Was passed in the Senate, went over the House, and they made some changes. But then ultimately passed it, and that included last year the risk assessment instrument that we were talking about just before,
yes.
allowing inmates to leave on their minimum when they haven't completed all the programs, as long as they, as a condition of parole,
right.
Complete those programs while on parole, and then deals with the technical parole violation issue in that it would have the infraction and the punishment be equal. In other words, that we're not over punishing a person for a technical parole violation.
Yeah, but considering what
was in the law last year, and they did vote for it and passed it, so the House was involved in that. But what we do know, there was a number of portions of that bill that didn't pass, and they're all part of Senate Bill 100. And one of the several portions of it, one of them is the intermittent punishment and having encouraging its use by removing some of the obstacles that prevented it from being used in the past. It's a very successful program. It provides mm-hmm. incentives for people to rehabilitate themselves, and it could be very successful in rehabilitating individuals. There are other portions of that bill. If you'd like me to go over some of them, I would be happy to do that.
Well, I appreciate that, but What I'm interested in is when we're talking about what we can do to be saving this money, and the fact that you have the Senate Bill 100 introduced, but my understanding is that on the House side, they don't have a similar measure at this point. And do you believe that they're going to have to come up with something on their own? I mean, it just seems to me as though Harrisburg politics is that if the House doesn't come up with their own, and then the Senate with their own, then they're unwilling oftentimes to then just adopt what the other House has brought up.
I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's what they are saying. I think what they're saying is that sometimes we let a particular piece of legislation up to one body or the other. Now, for example, the House may be concentrating their efforts on some other subject matter. And the Senate, through my activities, seem to be interested in this.
Right.
Doesn't mean they won't pass it, or that they need a proposal of their own. they're just going to look at it as an independent body and review it and may change it or correct it or improve it. And so we've been talking to the House all summer, as well as the governor's office, who's been very supportive, of and also law enforcement members and others, to work out a bill that would be acceptable to all. So
we're incarcerating.
As they passed it last session, the other bill, I think they'll pass this bill as well. It's just we have to work out the details.
All right, so we're incarcerating people and we're spending $1.9 billion a year. Now you're talking about expanding rehabilitation of these individuals. That's going to cost more money. How are we going to get the savings, if you will?
Well, in a lot of ways, it's less expensive. For example, it costs about $80 to $90 a day to incarcerate someone in state prisons. My understanding, it costs about $3 a day to put them on probation when they're released. And so, area we could say, yes, once they're released, then if we do have an effective parole and probation system, then we're going to spend a little bit more money on them, on their reentry program. That's part of Senate Bill 1 that we authorize and direct the Department of Corrections and Parole and Probation to contract with community, faith-based, and private charitable organizations to help them provide for vocational training, education, follow-up treatment services, support with finding housing and employment. So, but in the long run, that money is well invested, because if we save a life and that person then goes back and starts to earn money, they're paying taxes. They have a family who is they're supporting a family. That family is not relying on state assistance to help them to get by, because they have a family that is being supported financially. We don't have the impact on children and as much. We have a high recidivism rate of children who are in families that have had incarceration. So we avoid many financial benefits and societal benefits that come with rehabilitating, if we can, and we have to try. That's not going to happen with everybody. But
what role do you see house arrest playing in this mix? Do you think we underutilize it? Are there more avenues, more options for us to take advantage of that, where the person would actually be paying for their own monitoring, and you see all of a sudden they go from a cost to the state to where now they're paying for it themselves. Do you see house arrest as playing a bigger role in this mix?
Oh, absolutely. There's all types of alternative programs that we could use, and that's why we want use that risk assessment tool that's now available to judges now. They can decide which individuals are dangerous to society and should not be released, and they can decide those that are before they sentence that person, and then provide a program.
Right.
And there's a whole continuum of programs that are out there that the judge could have access to use and tailor make for that particular person.
What about the political pressures? I mean, because judges, they deal with this themselves as well as you guys do in the House and the Senate in Harrisburg, that if you're looking at judges coming up with these alternative sentencing guidelines, and then all of a sudden they're not perceived as being as tough on crime as they otherwise could be, I'm concerned that judges are going to ignore some of the guidelines and the programs that you're talking about for their own political purposes, because they're not going to want to have that kind of exposure. Are you concerned at all about that?
Well, that it has happened and could happen and has happened. But that's why I'm on your show here tonight, because I think it's important for us to let the people of Pennsylvania know what's happening. And they are just people. And once they know all the facts and all the financial facts and societal facts, that they'll understand what's going on, and that we don't have to put everybody in life imprisonment for everything that happens and or over punish someone who's committed a nonviolent offense and put them in prison for 10 years. I mean, so it's all about having the people of Pennsylvania understanding what we're doing, and,
right.
and that's what I'm trying to do this evening.
I appreciate that. Stuart Greenleaf with us, Senator Stuart Greenleaf, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Greenleaf, thank you very much for your time tonight. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Same here.
I appreciate that very much.